Sports stories from the 419 in Northwest Ohio, brought to you by a voice you know. It's time to go around the area and around the Hearn.
Welcome to the first Around the Hearn of 2024. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and a happy and safe New Year's. A lot to get to in 2024, but today is about something special, and I'm going to get right to it with having a referee and a really good conversation. Full disclosure, it's actually a couple of weeks old just because holidays kind of got in the way and things happen. But a terrific conversation with Hannah Keller, who is from Spencerville, and if you don't know, you'll know, became the first woman to officiate an OHSAA State Finals football game. We'll talk a lot about that and kind of about some connections that she and I have through her family and being from the same hometown. And a lot of other things. I really enjoy this interview. I'm glad I'm finally getting this out, to be honest with you. And I hope that you enjoy this first edition of 2024 of Around the Hearn. Are you in Spencerville and looking for a place to eat before the Bearcats play? Well then, head to My Place, 128 North Broadway, for deep-fried mushrooms, chili cheese fries, the best pie around, and soup of the day. If you're in a hurry and just want to order some to go, you can give Doug and his staff a call at 419-647-4062, and they'll have it ready for you. My Place Restaurant at 128 North Broadway in Spencerville, a proud supporter of Bearcat Athletics. I am pretty sure that there is no one on this podcast, in the history of this podcast, that I've had as a guest that I can intro by saying that their dad has not only coached me, but has probably, as an official, tried to throw me out of a game before today when I talked to Hannah Keller. And that's a true story. Your dad actually coached me in soccer when I was 12, and I'm pretty sure probably tried to throw me out of a game or two when he was officiating.
Nice. Awesome.
Does that even shock you at all?
I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but, it is what it is, I guess. I'm sorry.
I had to go back and look through my photo albums because I thought her dad coached me at some point. I'm not going to say that I turned out as a great soccer player, so I'm not saying it's not his fault, but, you know, maybe if you want to tell him the story that way.
Perfect. Got it. I will make that note.
Speaking of your dad, I wanted to ask you about this because I read an article and you have been on a media tour recently because you did something that we'll get to here in a minute, but your dad obviously has been an official your entire life. What was that like growing up? I mean, you end up being an official, but did you know from a certain point of seeing him do it and seeing the hours and seeing everything that goes into it that you wanted to do that, or did it just sort of come later?
I would say it was something that came later on. I watched him do it, right? And I knew he did it. It was pretty cool this year. You know, I celebrated 10 years of officiating football, and he was at 15. So that was cool that we both got to, you know, experience that together. And then, as you know, he's been coaching just softball, umpiring softball for far longer than that. And he's been doing basketball longer than he's been doing football. So, you know, being
well, you're trying to say your dad is old. I get it.
maybe a little bit.
You're not saying it either, though.
You're right. So, I had went with him, and I knew the time that went in. Right, I, you know, there were times that, I can remember him not being at certain things, right, or him being late because he worked a game. And it was just something that he did, right? Like, dad has a game. He won't be here tonight, or he's going to get home later, things like that. It didn't really register as something significant that he was doing. Like, now that I'm a referee and, you know, I know the time that goes into everything and, you know, how much time I'm away from home and different things like that throughout each season. But I didn't really think about it at the time. And then, you know, when I decided to stop playing basketball, it was kind of an automatic, right? He's like, well, if you're not doing this, then you should do this. Okay. Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it. I've watched you do it. I've, you know, done it a little bit unofficially. So, why not try it and make some money?
people maybe who don't know, there's a really neat story about you on Spectrum did it, that Taylor Brook did a really good job, and they talk about kind of with you of that playing basketball, that stopping that transition is at 16. I mean, that's a big decision for someone of that age. Was it just you realized maybe basketball wasn't for you, or you realized maybe the other thing was kind of more for you?
I didn't want to play anymore. It wasn't, I love basketball by all means. I didn't want to play. I didn't enjoy playing. There was some transition that we had in coaches and different things like that. And, you know, I played softball and I thought, man, I would have so much more time in the winter to focus on that. You know, because my sister was a pretty great pitcher, and I thought, oh, if I pitch all winter, you know, maybe I can be as good as her and just get better at something that I do enjoy doing. Right. So, you know, my dad and I had talked a little bit about officiating before I stopped playing basketball anyways, just because, you know, he's in his own way, he's like a little bit of a businessman, right? Hey, it's a great way to make money. You know, I have connections. I can get you started. There's youth stuff that happens all the time. You know, the game of basketball, it's really not that hard. You're probably going to get yelled at. You'll be fine, you know, but it'd be a good opportunity if you're not, you know, playing, and you'll stay involved with the game, different things like that. So it was on the back of my mind, but then when I officially decided to stop playing, it's like a piece of you missing a little bit, right? It's like, man, you play after all that time, and so then when you stop doing that and you're not involved, it's the same way like when you graduate high school, right, and you're no longer playing sports, period. There's just like this point where you feel like you have this need. It's like something's missing this time of year, right? And so that was my way to also stay involved, you know, was to start officiating.
Did you ever have your dad, did he ever call one of your games before you started officiating yourself?
I don't think so. Not that I can remember. He pretty much tried to stay separated from that, which is understandable. I would want to do the same thing as a parent. But I don't ever remember him calling any games, no.
When you were learning the game and when you were learning the officiating side of it and you sat and watched games, did you watch any he was doing, and did you feel the need to boo him with everybody else? Because I assume that he got booed, right?
Oh, absolutely. But just like, you know, everyone else in the stands, I wasn't as educated as he was on the rules, right? And so basically when you're sitting up there, a lot of things that you might think are fact are not, right? Contrary to popular belief, you don't have to be set to take a charge, right? But basic basketball knowledge and what you hear growing up and what you hear people scream all the time, you would think that that's fact. So until you educate yourself on those things, you don't know, right? So, you know, there are a few times we'd be driving home and you're like, man, Dad, why'd you call that? Like, that seems like it was bad. He explained it to me. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Now I get it, right? But yeah, definitely some moments. I was a big fan of a couple local teams kind of growing up. There were a couple really good players that I admired. So anytime he had those teams, you know, I always wanted to go watch, and you know, he would get booed about certain things or call foul, you know, on one of those players. I'm like, man, Dad, come on, let him play, you know.
That's funny. You can boo him now. Like, it's fine. I joke, but I really love your dad. I've always thought when I see a game that he does, and there haven't been as many lately, just kind of we don't run in the same circle apparently, that I've always said to people, you know, I'll call him out by name and I'll say, hey, that's who made that call. But then I'll say, hey, there's a good call or no call by him, because I truly enjoy, kind of to piggyback what you're saying, of how he's able to look at a rule and go, okay, but also able to kind of gray line it and say, but I don't have to call everything. There's a little bit of wiggle room here of I can let them play. And that it's, I think most important for me, that it's the same in the first minute as it is in the last minute.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand. You know, you have the black and the white of the rule book, but there's this gray area where philosophy falls. And that's where referees are different, right? But that's also where we have to be consistent. And when you're consistent in that gray area, I think your games go a lot smoother. It's always nice when you work with a couple other officials, you know, on a basketball court or on a football field, and you're all on the same page when it comes to that gray area. And I think that our games are best when we're good in that space. You know, the same way that if I called a junior high girls basketball game, the same way that you call a varsity boys basketball game in the MAC, right, or in the NWC, it's going to look a lot different. I mean, it's because those athletes are different, right? And the level of contact that they can handle, you know, how we're applying the rules to that specific game. And that might not make sense to some people. Or it's like, well, that's, you should call it. If it's a foul, it's a foul, it's a foul. Okay, yes, I understand where you're coming from with that. But when we look at it from a 3,000 foot view, right, maybe 3,000 isn't high enough. However, way up there, you know, you have to realize what's best for the game. And it's our job as officials to find what fits that based on our rules, right? When we're officiating a game. So a lot of different teams are going to give you a lot of different things, different offenses, different defenses. I love when people complain, well, the fouls are 10-1, whatever. But yeah, it's because that team's pressing full court the entire time in a man defense. And these people down here sitting in a zone, barely, you know, closing out on shots. Of course, they're not going to foul, but people don't understand that, right? They just see what's there. So all different parts of our game. And, you know, I appreciate when announcers, you know, listening in on, you know, games and stuff, and announcers acknowledge good calls, you know, bad calls, where they try to explain different things, or, you know, they know the rule, right? And they can help educate the general public on why something was or was not called.
I have always figured, and I've always said, I feel like from watching thousands of games, that you could probably call traveling, a foul, or holding in football on pretty much every single play. So it's finding that nuance of, did this really affect the entire outcome of what was going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Specifically holding. I mean, we have an entire, you know, mechanics and things that go around that from a football standpoint. But yeah, it's traveling is the number one missed call in the game of basketball. I think the NCAA did a study a couple of years ago, you know, just different clips and things. And it's because travels happen so fast, and you have to identify the pivot foot right away as a referee. And if you don't, and something funky happens, right, we're more apt to just call travel because it looks weird. Now you have athletes that are getting really, really good at the up and under, right? And as referees, we have to make sure we identify that pivot foot, because a lot of times, at least what I'm seeing, and I am guilty of it, you know, every now and then is we don't pick that up, and then we have that move, right, and we deem it a travel and it's not. So but that is the number one. People would think it would be block charges, right? We always see, oh, you know, block charge, or, well, they missed this and blah blah blah, but it's actually traveling. That's the number one thing that we missed from a a call accuracy percentage.
I know that doing research, there's a lot of things out there about you, and other officials have said this too, about that you watch or study an insane amount of, whether it's video of calls or of whatever. But when specifically, say, games are on TV or streamed or whatever, how many times do you go back and watch, say, your game of, okay, and I know you guys get graded, but that you maybe grade yourself of, was I in a good position here? Could I have made a better call there? Did I need to call this? Stuff like that.
Definitely. I mean, every single one that I get, right? High school is a little different because you know, from football and basketball standpoint, because you have to, you know, have a coach be willing to send that to you. All the coaches that I've worked with recently have been very good about sending that film. You know, I have ways that I can get it regardless, but, you know, it's always nice to be able just to have that download and go back through it. It does take time, but you know, specifically with basketball, you know, when something happens, I think to myself, man, that's one we need to take a look at. We know in the moment, which is something I think that people don't think that referees recognize, is when we're bad. Right? Like every single time that I missed something or I screw up or I could have been in a better position, right? I know that. I have the self-awareness to know that. And that's, those are the moments when you go back and you take a look at it. Okay, was I in the right position? You know, you've seen me, I'm short, right? So the angle that I need to take on a specific play, whether it's football or basketball, is going to be different than someone that's 6'4". So when I go back and I look at that, I'm looking at the actual play that happened first, right? I'm looking at where I should be, and where, you know, I am at the moment. And then kind of the third time you take a look at that, you're putting all of that together. Okay. So what can I do better? What should I have been looking at? Should I picked up that play sooner? You know, just different things like that. But we do, I would say, you know, a majority of officials that strive to get better and want to get better, are working at higher levels. You have to watch film, because if you don't, how are you going to know what you need to do different?
Well, if you do an Audeville boys game and you get the chance to run Keith Utendorf, there will be a nice gift card that we'll maybe follow.
I don't think I have them at all, but that's a shame. That's funny that you say that.
It's funny, but a couple of officials would take that as I might get the chance. I joke because I love him. Someone will inevitably say, why are you so mean to him? I wouldn't mention his name if I didn't like him. So we get to the thing that a lot of people are talking about, and that comes with the state finals. More than 3,000 referees that I'm told who do football, but December 2nd, Perry and Liberty Center, you got to do something that no female official has done before, and do a state finals game. I know this because I knew it sort of as a peripheral thing, but as I was walking out of the stadium in Canton, we did the Marion local game on the radio, and I get to the parking lot, and this little blonde lady flags me down, and she says to my partner and I, you guys aren't leaving, are you? And I said, yeah, I stopped getting paid about an hour ago. And she says, I said, why? I'm like, why is this random lady in the parking lot tailgate? Why is she yelling at me? And she says, well, you got to stay for the next game. My daughter's doing the game. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, all right, this lady might be insane. And because I've purged my brain of random things at this point, I'm just thinking about getting home, you know? And this lady looks at me and she says, you're Mike Hearn, right? Now, at this point, I turned and looked at my color guy, Denny, and I said nothing because I just sort of shot him a glance of how quick can I get in the car? Will she see me? Like, is this like a dinosaur, you know, where they only sense movement? And I said, unless they owe you money, to which she responded, you're Mike Hearn from Spencerville, right? And I thought, what? Now I look at my color guy and it's uncomfortable. And I look back up at this lady and she says, my name's Bobby. I used to babysit you, to which my color guy just starts laughing hysterically. And then follows up with, I used to date your Uncle Tom. By the way, for anybody who doesn't get this, that was her mom. So your mom, in her own way, was super proud of you for being able to do this game. And I'll be honest, I have not seen her in a while with living in Findlay and just kind of not being around a lot of Spencerville games at home. I've not seen her in a while. And I'm thinking, why is this lady who's at the Perry Liberty Center game yelling at me in a parking lot? So, you know, I have a connection to both your parents that probably didn't show up in any other interview you've done.
Right. Yeah, it has not.
So the gist of that is your mom was super proud of you, just in case you ever wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
But that whole day had to be, I would think, two different things, because a little bit stressful in that it's something, obviously, you know, everybody's going to put that in the landscape of, oh, this has never been done before. But for you, it's the pressure of just it being that kind of game by itself of having the importance. Yes, it's another game for you in terms of how many games you've already worked and that you know the game and all of that. But, I mean, just kind of walk me through what that day was like for you.
Yeah, so back in, I'm pretty sure it was 2018, I worked my first playoff game, period. And, you know, I worked the game. I was super excited to get postseason, right? You want to do that. I had done it in basketball. So, you know, it's an achievement, right, to get a postseason assignment. And a couple weeks after I worked that game, I had my boss at the time when I was in college. It was in college at the time. He, you know, called me and he's like, "Hey, just, you know, funny tidbit here. Did you know you were the first woman to ever work a playoff game in the state of Ohio?" I'm like, "Huh, interesting. It's pretty cool." You know, I didn't really think anything about it because I just, that's not why I do this, right? You know, I love officiating. I love the game of football. I love being able to give back to the game and to student athletes and different things like that. So it didn't really cross my mind, but, you know, and it didn't change what I wanted to do, right? I still want to get better. I wanted to keep, you know, getting more postseason assignments. You know, you want the big regular season assignments, and you want to get on a good crew that has a decent schedule and things like that. So I didn't really think anything of it. But then as I progressed, right, and you work more and more postseason games, because like you said, you get graded. So we're observed basically almost every single postseason game that you have in the state. We have observers that come and basically tell us what we did well and what we need to do better at. And then, you know, you're graded and all that information goes to the state. So as I were every single round I worked, I was the first, right? So I knew last year when I worked the state semifinal that, you know, if I graded out, I would, you know, hopefully, and I've chosen, hopefully have the opportunity to work a state final this year. So when I got that assignment, it was a little surreal, you know, like, oh, okay, awesome. Not only am I proud to achieve that, right, to have a state final, that's what every referee wants to do. But then there's the added piece of, you know, I get the opportunity to step out there and be the first. So, and that assignment came, I want to say, end of October. Ish. No, it was probably before that because the season ends October 20th. So it was probably week 8. So I knew for a while there going into it wasn't anything that I really thought about beyond that. I mean, my family knew, like, hey, just a heads up, I have a state final. And cool part about it is that I'm going to be the first woman to do it, right? It didn't really set in until we started working like postseason games and we had our banquet for our association at the end of the year. And Denny Morris was there talking about postseason assignments. And he, you know, mentioned that I would be the first, and the reaction of the room, you know, people were like, "Oh my gosh, that's awesome." And I didn't, I'm like, okay, actually, yeah, I guess it is pretty awesome. Didn't need something a little bit. So that day though, you know, I've worked two state finals in basketball. So I'm familiar with the OHSA process and kind of how all that works and, you know, kind of the hype leading up to it and all of that. But football, it was definitely a little different. I mean, you were in Canton, huge stadium. Thankfully, the crew that I'm with, we had worked weeks 13 and on together. They were also my state semi crew from the previous year. So we were all familiar with each other. Great group of guys. They were awesome to work with. And, you know, getting into the actual venue is fine, but everything around that is just straight chaos, right? It really disrupts kind of your pregame routine in a way. I'm sure when you call a game, you have a whole process that you go through prior to that, research and different things. But you have people in and out of the locker room constantly. You know, we have replay, which was, you know, really cool to be a part of. The OHSA state finals, your replay guys are an NFL official and a guy who has, you know, Big Ten experience.
That guy is amazing, by the way.
Right?
Because yeah. I got to sit next to, we had the booth next to him both days that we were there, and to just watch him just roll through with that computer is just fascinating.
Yeah. So super great. I mean, that's awesome for our athletes too, right? Great to have that, you know, high price.
Depends on how the replay goes.
I guess that's true. But from a non, you know, biased standpoint, it's really great, you know, for the game and for the state. But so you have that added aspect. And then, you know, there's just a ton of people. I remember standing at the coin toss And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never been a part of a coin toss where there are this many people standing around. So you just have that added piece of it's on TV. You know, it's a high level, high profile game. And all that runs through your mind. I was nervous. I mean, you get into the venue, you're nervous. But when you start getting ready, you know, you put your pants on the same, put shoes on the same. You get ready. You have a pregame with your crew. We talk through a bunch of stuff, getting ready to go out there. And then once you step on the field, you just take a moment to take it in, right? The same way that any big moment, I feel like any athlete or coach has, you have to stop and appreciate it for what it is. And I think, you know, once I got past, because, you know, Taylor wanted to do that interview earlier in the week. I think once that was done and I was like, okay, it's stated, whatever, maybe the first woman to do it. Cool. Now it's time to go to work and make sure that I set a standard, right? because that's another piece of it that, you know, sure, I am the first, but I want to make sure I do a good job at being the first. And hopefully there will be plenty after me that achieve the same thing. So, you know, you get out there, you meet the coaches the same way you do everything else. It's just a bigger venue. Then you have the added picture taking that goes on with that, which my mom was also, I don't know if you saw her shirt that day, but they surprised me with that before we left, her and my grandma, which I thought was really funny. They're awesome. Very thankful for both of them, along with my dad and other people that were there to support me. So we got pictures with them, and then you just go through your pregame routine. Honestly, once the football went there, I didn't really think about it. It was just it was another football game, play by play, call what you see, manage everything appropriately. The only thing that got me was when we did have one replay situation, and they're in your, you know, we have O2Os, our radios, so we can all communicate with each other, communicate with the box. And we had to go to replay, and they're in our ear like, shut the game down. All right. We're all killing the clock and stuff. And then going over and managing that extra piece. So, you know, a lot of nerves, but we got it done. And then as you run off the field, you're like, wow, okay. Just work to stay final. And it also keeps you hungry, right? You want to get back there. So yes, I achieved that, but, you want another opportunity. So it kind of helps you keep going and motivates you to keep getting better.
Well, it's kind of funny because I can only imagine that with the trip and with all of your family, it was almost just easier to deal with of not everything before, not everything after of, all right, I'm going to go to work now and I'm just going to be able to zone in on this for 3 hours. And then I'll, of course, you go back to the chaos afterwards.
Right. And I would say, that's one thing that I appreciate about officiating in general. You know, that for, you know, I'm in basketball season right now, no matter what happens at work, or, you know, what happens at home, whatever, you know, those are just 2 hours that this is all you have to focus on. Right. And you get to have fun, you get a little workout in, you get to enjoy the game, and then you can deal with the rest of that stuff later. But for at least for those 2 hours, this is all you have to worry about. And, you know, that's how it felt that day. Hey, it doesn't matter what's going on outside of this. This is all you have to focus on for this amount of time and do the best that you possibly can and then move on from there. So
that's always kind of been my thing, too, is, you know, I call it when the red light goes on, that when you go live, nobody really cares if you know, ate an ice cream sandwich or if you maybe say had a nail in the tire of your car or, you know, any kind of crazy thing that might have happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and it's funny, too, because you kind of answered what I was thinking the whole time of. It's an immense amount of pressure, maybe whether you realize it at the time or not, of, okay, if I'm the first, that means I really do have to kind of be good enough or not screw up or however you want to look at it, to the point where it's not just about me. It's about everyone of my kind behind me of they're all kind of looking at me going, all right, don't screw this up for the rest of us.
Yeah. And I think that goes for officials that work the finals in general, right? We are like the poster children for what an official should be in the state of Ohio. And, you know, I can remember watching, you know, boys and girls state basketball tournament, you know, when I was younger, and I was a referee at the time, but you know, you see those people working those games, like, you know, this is the standard, right? This is what you have to be in order to get to this level as a referee in the state of Ohio. And so, you know, that goes through my mind as well, you know, as we're standing down there and you know, working those games. It's just a reminder of, hey, you're representing a group of people right now. And so you need to make sure that you're following everything that you need to do to a T, because I guarantee, and I saw it, you know, regardless of me being the first or a woman or whatever, it doesn't matter my gender. People are going to have things to say, right, about officials that get to that level who haven't been there. There's always like naysayers, you know, of reasons why a certain person shouldn't be at that spot, or why, you know, all the wrong reasons of why they got there. It's not because I have 10 years of experience and I've worked high level games and I've been successful at these and I've graded out, right? It's, oh, well, okay, she's on this crew, or she's a woman, right? Just different things like that. So that type of stuff is always in the back of my mind, because I don't want that to be the reason, right? I want people to see that I work hard and that I've put in the time and the effort and I'm good at what I do, just like every other official wants to as well.
It's amusing to me because as you're talking, I'm reading things from a while ago, and you did an interview in the Daily News in 2018 where they talk about you're 23 years old, you just graduated in your second season on a varsity crew, and that one of the things that you got was that a lot of people, because it's been such a male-dominated thing with officiating, would turn to you and say, yes, sir, and then just kind of stop for a second. How much is that still going on, or are people just, I mean, obviously, again, because it's been guys for so long that they're just kind of caught up in that.
It's not a big deal at all. If I was offended by things like that, I wouldn't be on a football field, right? Or things that people say. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, how often do they see a woman on it? It might be once a year. It might be one, you know, that student athlete might see me once in their entire career. You know, at least they're trying to be respectful, is how I take it, right? At least you're trying to address me respectfully. But yeah, it's, I would say from a standpoint of it still going on, it still happens from time to time. Of course it does. But I think that now that I've been, you know, I just moved back to, you know, the Lima area, but being in Dayton for so long and Southwest Ohio in general, you know, I've built a rapport with a lot of those coaches. I've seen them, you know, multiple times. I've worked in the same conferences for the past 5-6 years. So, they know who I am. They've seen me before. And I mean, I would say it happens less often than it did then, but it definitely still does. And it's no big deal.
Well, it's funny to me because of the 10 or so articles that I pulled up when I was looking for different things. And even to back to when you're listed as being from St. Paris, a lot of the things that are talked about are not necessarily about you being a woman referee, but about you being 5'2". And I thought that was fascinating. So now you're setting the standard for two different things. You're setting the standard for, I guess I would say, height-challenged officials and women officials. So congratulations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
It's not my fault. That's what showed up when I put your name in there. I'm just saying, even Mark Freilich, when you did his podcast, even he said that.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps that he's like 6'4".
He's definitely tall. It does play into it somewhat, right? Like I was talking about different angles and things earlier. It's a factor. I think people that are taller in certain situations have a better ability to see things differently. So, and, you know, I've always been told different things that people have to referee big. And so, you know, being smaller, right, you have to adjust what you're doing a little bit. So I'm not surprised that that has been a trend.
I'd just like to go back to how I started this podcast. If all fails, blame your dad.
I mean, I guess you have a point, huh?
I'm pretty sure that's just good life advice from me to you, if nothing else. Well, I'm so glad that we were finally able to do this, that it worked out. I've been looking forward to this for a while because I wanted to do a different interview than a lot of people I'm sure had done of, hey, just tell us this, just tell us that, of having us, you know, sharing a hometown and sharing, obviously, your family and a lot of people that we have a lot of cross connections, sort of the Venn diagram and all that. But I cannot say enough how much I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you giving this, you know, space. And, you know, it's always nice to be able to talk just about officiating in general, because I'm sure you're aware we have such a shortage in the state and across the country of referees. And, you know, I hate when we see situations where games and student athletes suffer because we can't field enough people to get things covered properly. And so, you know, any chance I get to kind of have a platform and use my experience and I guess an achievement, right, to air that out there, I want to. So just a reminder that we need people. We can't push quality without quantity. So if we want that to get better, we have to recruit more officials and see how we can work to better the games we serve.
We've got to find someone not in the Keller family, I think is how that goes. I think we're pretty much out. We just make your mom an official.
Oh, that would not go well.
I mean, right. You started with intramurals. Like, I would pay to see your mom doing intramurals.
Oh, that would be funny.
I would hate it for the athletes who are participating, but, you know, that feels like that's their problem.
Ooh, at least she would be nice.
I got a 2-year-old daughter. You want to try and put her on your crew? She said no, by the way.
She just said nope.
She's not down for that kind of hatred from half the people all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely something you have to get used to, but is what it is.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to it. Sometime we'll have you back on, and I'll come up with another story to make fun of your dad. Sure, they're out there.
Sounds good. Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
That's Hannah Keller. We've got some more coming up here in just a couple of minutes.
The Scoop on Main in Glandorf, serving breakfast, lunch, and sweet treats all year long. We are open Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. and Friday from 7 a.m. until 6 p.m. Saturdays are 8 a.m. till 2 p.m. and Sundays are noon until 8. We have a great option of lattes and specialty drinks. We feature a monthly special lunch, and we have soup seasonally.
The Scoop on Main at 419-538-5555. That's the Scoop on Main at 136 South Main Street in Glandorf.
Thanks for tuning in and checking out this episode of Around the Hearn. I hope you enjoyed the half an hour or so conversation with Hannah Keller, and that you come back and check out more shows. You can find them on demand as well, and always on WZOQ Radio every Sunday at noon. That's what I have for you, though, for this episode. Again, I can't thank you enough for listening. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you think, who you think should be on this show as we get back into the swing of what is the normal schedule-ish in 2024. Have a great night, and an even better tomorrow from Around the Hearn. Here I go.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Around the Hearn. Come back next week for more local stories from the NWO. But until then, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Michael Hearn PBP for more great area content.